Good morning. This is Northern Light for Tuesday, March 5th. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
An event in Potsdam tonight is part of a statewide effort to educate parents and athletic directors on the seriousness of concussions.
It actually is a brain injury. There's metabolic things that happen in the brain after a head injury. And then it's really updating everybody on kind of the newest guidelines. And one of the bigger things is that you can use exercise as a treatment in your recovery process.
Governor Hochul is touting her track record on combating crime this election year.
In part two of our snowmobiling series, we go for a ride with a volunteer in Turin grooming the trails in Lewis County.
And Susan Riley started weaving after she retired. She shares her love of fiber, textiles, and yarn in a new exhibit in Waddington.
Weavers, we just collect and collect and collect. And that's what I love to do. I love to create texture and I love to combine colors.
All that and more is coming up on Northern Light. Stick with us.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by Fisher, Bissett, Muldowney, and McArdle, attorneys and counselors at law with offices in Malone, Tupper Lake, and Saranac Lake. 800-941-5001. And Adirondack Foundation, connecting people, ideas, and resources to improve lives and expand opportunities throughout the Adirondack region. Details at adirondackfoundation.org.
This is Northern Light. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. Doctors and athletic trainers have been working for years now to get student athletes and their parents to take concussions seriously.
It's not just something, my bell got rung. We used to hear that all the time from student athletes. I just got my bell rung, I'll be fine. Well, that's not necessarily true. You need to be evaluated.
Brian Atkins is head athletic trainer at St. Lawrence University. He's one of the speakers at a workshop on concussion prevention and education at Potsdam High School tonight at 6. It's part of a statewide outreach effort from the Brain Injury Association of New York State and the State Athletic Trainers Association. Atkins told David Summerstein, diagnosing and treating concussions early makes a big difference in a young person's recovery.
If you're experiencing symptoms that you sustained a head injury and you're not feeling good, you have a headache, dizziness, nausea, you have to speak up. And if something we did not necessarily see any observable signs right away where we need to go and have a conversation and talk to you and pull you out for an evaluation, you really need to speak up and say something, because the research continues to show that the earlier somebody reports and does through a thorough evaluation and is managed properly, the most successful that they are when returning back from that type of injury.
Is it even also the case that if you are hit in the head and you may not even feel different or bad like at the time,
correct,
is that also still something you should pay attention to?
Yeah, definitely. A lot of the newer research that is coming out is showing that symptoms are delayed. Maybe they're not right away, but it could be after the game, could be the next day, could be a couple days later. That's the biggest thing what we worry about. From an injury standpoint, if somebody does sustain a head injury, they don't say anything, and now they're going days and days and sometimes weeks without reporting something when they haven't necessarily been feeling very well. And then when you're doing that, you're putting yourself at risk for a potential further injury or delaying your recovery in that, where you're going to be out that much more longer when those symptoms become so more excessive that it becomes much more noticeable about what's going on.
Your presentation is part of an effort statewide to reach out to high school coaches, to parents, to athletic directors, to sort of tell them the latest about how to deal with concussions. What are you going to be talking about at the presentation?
More on my end, part of it is, letting everybody know what a concussion is. It actually is a brain injury. There's metabolic things that happen in the brain after a head injury. And then it's really updating everybody on kind of the newest guidelines. And one of the bigger things that has come out in the latest guidelines is that you can use exercise as a treatment in your recovery process after a concussion. There used to be, and this isn't that far away, long ago, that there was this cocooning type therapy where you, when you have sustained a concussion, you're not supposed to do anything. You're supposed to stay in a dark room. You're supposed to really rest and not engage in any sort of activity, be home from school for a week, those type of things. Those guidelines have drastically changed where you are actually now supposed to use light exercise or tolerable exercise that you can tolerate and not make symptoms worse, that can actually help you in your recovery and help you recover, not necessarily faster, but it allows you to get some movement back into the body that'll help support that in that recovery. And I say exercise, I'm actually talking about fitness. You know, I say exercise to coaches and they think it's practice. That's not what we're talking about. We're not trying to put anybody back into a situation where there could be a potential for another head injury while somebody's recovering. We're talking about activities of daily living, walking, maybe some light biking, where their symptoms are not getting exacerbated with more activity, that symptom-tolerated exercise is at a threshold that stays below any increase in symptoms. Or if there is a slight increase, it's something that's very small and only lasts for what we would say up to an hour. But the other part that sometimes gets forgotten is getting somebody back to education, into their academics, which obviously is extremely important in the college settings, also very important in the high school and middle school youth or in elementary settings as well. Going back to that cocooning type therapy, it used to be resting for 3 or 4 days, no school. Now we're really talking about, like, you can get back into cognitive and doing school at a tolerable level, but just doing it with assistance, whether it be extensions, whether it be not going to all of your classes, only going for a few hours, and just trying to gauging that. And it's really at a, you know, case by case level and developing that plan for individual people.
Brian Atkins is head athletic trainer at St. Lawrence University. He spoke with David Summerstein. Tonight's workshop on concussion prevention and education is at 6 o'clock at Potsdam High School. The Brain Injury Association of New York State and the State Athletic Trainers Association have been holding similar workshops statewide to educate students and coaches, including in Plattsburgh and Watertown.
Snowmobiling is an $80 million industry on the Tug Hill Plateau in Jefferson and Lewis counties. Warmer winters caused by climate change are endangering that economy. Yesterday, we heard from people in the business who are navigating those changes. Today, a look into the volunteer snowmobile clubs that groom hundreds of miles of trails. Amy Feireisel reports.
A huge metal building sits high on the Tug Hill Plateau. It's the Turin Ridge Riders vehicle barn. Inside are the club's groomers, basically enormous snow tractors. And each one has a name.
This is Robbie. This one is Blackwell.
That's 40-year-old Chris Skipper, the president of the Turin Ridge Riders Snowmobile Club.
And then Skidmore is outside, and Pixie is in the lean-to.
They've got cute names, but these are huge machines, 50 feet long, 20,000 pounds heavy, capable of moving through heavy and deep snow. Each one pulls a drag, which makes those clean, flat snowmobile trails.
There's moguls that get built up on the trail, and we utilize the drag. It actually cuts those moguls, processes the snow, and because snow is a crystalline structure, it allows the snow to move around, which creates heat through friction, and that crystalline structure then readheres to itself, and it makes a nice flat trail.
Each winter, this club maintains about 50 miles of snowmobile trails with around the same number of volunteers.
Their time, some of them give an hour or two, some of them give months of their life to this cause.
And this is a year-round operation. In the summer, they're fixing groomers and repairing bridges. In the fall, they're marking trails. After snowmobiling ends, they're cleaning it all up and getting ready for the next year. Today, with snow on the ground, Skipper is taking me out on a short grooming run.
Cool. All right. Awesome.
All right. Now, go for a ride.
A snowstorm came through a few days ago, and it looks like a snow globe. Snowmobiles whiz by as I climb steep steps into the groomer named Skidmore.
I'm going to get in first, but you can hop in right behind me. There's 2 seats here.
Okay, great.
We settle into what feels like a tiny cockpit high off the ground.
We're going to shift into drive. So right now, I'm just going to plow this little snowbank out of the way here.
Wow, you are moving a lot of snow.
Oh, yeah.
Typically, if there's snow, the club has got 3 groomers out 7 days a week. Each shift takes between 6 and 10 hours. Skipper says some folks take multiple shifts and really have the touch.
We have some people who are supremely skilled who operate heavy equipment on a daily basis, whether it be bulldozers, graders, cranes, and they are fantastic.
The Turin Ridge Riders are part of a huge volunteer ecosystem here in Lewis County. 7 different clubs groom over 600 miles of snowmobile trails. The clubs buy and maintain equipment through grants and fundraising efforts. Skipper says they do it because snowmobiling is a huge economic driver here. About 900 jobs and $80 million in annual sales are linked to snowmobiling.
You know, a lot of people in Lewis County, you know, work in snowmobile and snowmobile-related industries or tourism-related industries in general.
We turn onto Seymour Road, a state truck trail. It's bumpy because lots of folks have been out riding this morning. Skipper lowers the drag.
All right, so now you should be able to see the snow kind of processing through there.
Oh my gosh, it's almost like frothy, like acting like water or something.
Yeah, it kind of looks like, you know, this, like a slushy machine or, you know, at your local gas station. It's the same concept.
The snow flows through the drag at a steady pace and a satiny smooth trail is left in its wake. It's beautiful out, prime snow conditions. A recent storm, it's nice and cold. This used to be the norm on the Tug Hill Plateau, but that's been changing, says Skipper.
You can't argue with the fact that there's a difference, for sure. We keep tremendous logs and data around when we groomed, how often we groomed, where we groomed, so we can see that within the data.
Climate change is causing warmer, but also more erratic weather, and that's showing up in the data. Skipper says over the past decade, there's been slightly less snow coupled with many more thaws.
You know, a week of snow followed by a week of rain, followed by a week of snow. So it's kind of more the wild swings in the weather.
That melts their base. It makes it a lot trickier to groom. And it's bad news for the snowmobiling economy. But ironically, sometimes the Tug Hill is busier than ever.
Especially over the past 5 years, the trend has been that if we have snow, and it's okay snow, that means very few other areas in the state have it. So from an economic standpoint, when we do have snow, it's very, very busy.
Skipper takes a wide left onto a trail cut through private farmland.
Owned by one of our longtime landowners, it'd be Demko Farms. Landowners, without them, none of this would really exist. We'd be relegated to a very small playground of seasonal roads and state truck trails, and they would connect to nowhere.
Connection is important. The Turin Ridge Riders trails connect with another system that makes it possible to snowmobile all the way from Old Forge to Lions Falls. Locally, their trails connect small hamlets and the Tug Hill.
If I didn't put the trails on my land, they wouldn't get from point A to point B, from Branningham to the hill.
Mike Brannigan owns Woods Hill Farm, a 2,000-acre dairy with miles of snowmobile trails set up in the fields. He says it's the neighborly thing to do.
To get trails to go from one establishment to the other to bring money into the county. And when they come through, they stay on the trail. I've had no issues with them.
That's music to Chris Skipper's ears. He says volunteers go through great pains to mark trails clearly with flags, and they work closely with landowners.
When we have sensitive crops, especially alfalfa, we'll keep the trail probably about 15 to maybe 20 feet wide because we're trying to minimize the footprint.
Skipper points out some snowmobiles taking a break a couple hundred yards away. He says they're doing it right.
These people are right here. Like, they're just pulled off to the side of the trail, 2 feet off to the side to take a break. That's great, but we don't want to see people off of the trail.
Skipper says bad riding etiquette can tip the delicate scale, balancing recreation, economic activity, and the local opinion of snowmobiling. The truth is, while lots of locals ride, lots of locals don't. Back in the grooming barn, Skipper says even amongst the club's volunteers, ridership is limited.
In fact, I would say that out of our 50 or so volunteers, this may shock you, probably less than half actually ride snowmobiles.
Now, why is that?
They just enjoy the social aspect of it, and they enjoy, you know, doing something, again, that's not necessarily for themselves.
Skipper says lots of their volunteers also staff volunteer ambulances or help run local food pantries.
Whatever it is, you know, I think that generally people in Lewis County and even the North Country, I would say, are very giving and very philanthropic by their nature.
And while this winter has been spotty, when the snow's falling, volunteers like Skipper are out making it beautiful for riders. Amy Feiereisel, North Country Public Radio on the Tug Hill Plateau.
Listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. It's 8:15. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandresky. Loom sat in Susan Riley's home for 20 years before she felt the passion to start using it. An exhibit of the St. Lawrence County Weaver's work is on display this month at Lake St. Lawrence Art Gallery in Waddington. And we've got a preview coming up in just a few minutes here on Northern Light.
Music by Colton guitarist Paul Myers. You'll find more of his music, part of our Underscore project, on our website at ncpr.org. Northern Light is supported by Long Run Wealth, an SEC-registered investment advisor in Lake Placid, providing comprehensive wealth management, retirement, and financial planning solutions. LongRunWealth.com. And Citizen Advocates, enabling people with developmental disabilities to live meaningful, self-chosen, and safe lives since 1975. Online at citizenadvocates.net.
Governor Kathy Hochul is touting the progress she says she's made on combating crime, including illegal guns and car thefts. Her remarks on Monday come as members of Congress and the state legislature are up for election and crime continues to be a public concern. Karen DeWitt reports.
The governor highlighted her achievements in fighting crime since taking office. She says state police have increased the number of illegal gun seizures by 160% since 2021, and over 1,400 weapons were confiscated in 2023. She says red flag orders, where a judge temporarily takes away weapons from someone deemed to be a potential danger to themselves or others, have also increased since that law was strengthened in 2022. She says so far this year, 290 red flag orders were issued and over 590 guns were taken. Hochul took aim at the more progressive members of her Democratic Party, saying she has never been against adding more resources to fight crime.
And at a time when others were recklessly calling for defunding the police, I actually increased funding. And we delivered results.
Hochul says she also used the gun seizure program as a model to crack down on the spate of auto thefts in Western New York. She says as a result, car thefts are down around 50% in Rochester and Buffalo. And Hochul has proposed in her state budget new powers for law enforcement to battle organized retail theft. While the state's crime rate is down from a pandemic high, New Yorkers continue to say in polls that crime is among their top issues of concern. Hochul is not up for re-election until 2026, but Democrats and Republicans are battling for key congressional seats that will be on the ballot this November. She blamed her predecessor, former Governor Andrew Cuomo, for passage of the controversial 2019 bail reform law. Hochul has revised that law to add more bail-eligible crimes back. Cuomo resigned in 2021 over multiple scandals.
And I was being, blamed for policies that were put in place by my predecessor related to stripping away a lot of the protections of our bail laws under the guise of reform. I'm the one who in 2022 had to push the legislature beyond where they ever wanted to go and rolling back some of them. After that, recidivism went down over 40%.
Hochul says she insisted that judges once again be given more discretion to set bail for certain felony offenses. And she says she plans to meet with the state's Office of Court Administration soon to make sure that judges understand the changes. Hochul's 2022 opponent, former Congressman Lee Zeldin, a Republican, made the bail reform laws a top campaign issue. Hochul's narrower-than-expected win that year has been partially attributed to Zeldin's success in making concerns about crime a chief topic of the race. Hochul says while the crime rate is dropping, she intends to increase funding for state police and be vigilant about trying to reduce it further, including crimes on the New York City subways. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
A family-owned theme park in the Adirondacks has been sold to a management company in Florida. The Noonan family had owned Water Safari in Old Forge for 46 years. On Friday, it sold the theme park to Innovative Attraction Management based in Central Florida. In a press release, the company said it's committed to preserving Water Safari and, quote, enhancing the experience for guests of all ages for years to come. The Water Safari Resort is the largest water theme park in the state. It also features a mini golf course, go-karts, a campground, and a lakefront hotel.
A Syracuse woman launched into space with NASA Sunday night. Jeanette Epps is part of a team of eight astronauts that lifted off from Florida around 11 p.m.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, ignition, engines full power, and liftoff of NASA Crew 8, Go Falcon, Go Stacer, Go with NASA.
Jeanette Epps is the second Black woman to be part of a long-term mission at the International Space Station. After the crew reached orbit, Epps thanked everyone for the support she's received over the years.
I'm so grateful for everyone, and I just want to give a big thanks to my family and friends who came from all over the world to see this. Thank you for supporting me through all the days of waiting to get to this point. Thank you for everything.
The crew of NASA astronauts are expected to dock at the space station early this morning. They'll live there for the next 6 months conducting scientific experiments.
An overnight school dance in South Glens Falls raised nearly $750,000. The South High Marathon Dance took place over the weekend. The event is in its 47th year. Throughout that time, it's generated more than $10 million, according to the Glens Falls Post-Star. The South High Marathon Dance raised money for more than 20 people and families, as well as 13 organizations this year. Donations will be made to a network of cancer centers, the Moreau Community Center, and the Alzheimer's Association of Northeastern New York. You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, Honor the Yarn. We talk with a Waddington weaver with a passion for fiber. Then stick around after the show for Bird Note, the nesting habits of great horned owls coming up at 8:42. But first, Todd has a look at the weather for us.
Cloudy with rain in the Glens Falls area today and a little cooler. Highs in the 40s. Also some scattered rain showers through much of the Adirondacks with highs in the 40s today. Elsewhere, clouds and a high near 60 later today. Light winds out of the south. Then good chance of rain moving into the region, across the region tonight and tomorrow. About a 50-50 chance of scattered showers tonight and about a 70-80% chance of rain tomorrow with highs in the mid to upper 40s. Right now in Canton, partly sunny and 52 degrees.
A new exhibit of work by Waddington fiber artist Susan Riley is on display this month at the Lake St. Lawrence Gallery in Waddington. Her pieces include woven wall tapestries, table runners, sculptures, and dyed silk scarves.
Sometimes it takes a while to discover a love for creating art. Life just gets in the way. Susan Riley first observed a woman weaving threads into cloth. At 25, she told herself weaving was something she wanted to learn. Her husband bought her a loom for her 40th birthday, and it sat in a room in her house for 20 years. After retirement, Riley dusted off her loom, took classes, collected yarn and other fibers, and made a commitment to weaving. Call it a pause and then a passion. Her weaving journey has included trips around the Americas, Asia, and even Antarctica, journeys that allowed her to discover new fibers and challenges of learning different weaving techniques. These days, you'll find her offering private lessons in her home studio that boasts 4 looms, still taking classes at the Hand Weaving Museum in Clayton, and helping to curate art at the Lake St. Lawrence Gallery in Waddington. That's where I caught up with her to talk about weaving and a love for fibers.
My name is Susan Riley, and I live outside of Waddington on Route 345. And I started weaving after I retired. So it's a pretty new thing for me.
I want to just say we're standing in front of one of your pieces here,
yes,
at the gallery.
Yes.
Is this your latest piece?
The latest piece.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
This took 9 months to weave. And I wove it at the Thousand Islands Art Center. So I was only up there once a week, so you factor that in. But it's what they call a miniature overshot. And I saw this in a magazine when I first started weaving. And I thought, someday I want to be able to do this. And I have now been able to do it. The designer took overshot motifs and combined them into border and then miniaturized it. So overshot is a older weaving technique that was done a lot in the colonial period. Hmm. And to have the mind that can take that and create that combination is fascinating to me.
And then you've got some braiding up here.
Yes. What I do is I do a lot of what these are called kumuhimo braids, and they're done on a disc. I have kumuhimo braids on all of my wall hangings. It's sort of my signature.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, where this warp is showing, I had wanted to make kumuhimo braids and put them through there.
Mm-hmm.
60 hours later, I had zillions of kumuhimo braids, and I did that. And it was way too much. So I took it out, I used this one, and the others will be in something else someday.
The old saying, sometimes less is more,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. This was a very early piece I did, and my mentor, Sonia Wall, when I first started weaving, I would come to her with some yarn, and I would say, what should I do with this? And if it was a lovely yarn like this, that's all variegated, she would say, you've got to respect the yarn, honor the yarn. So this is what we call a balanced weave. So it's equal amounts of warp, which goes through the loom, and weft.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that's why they call it balanced or plain weave. And so you get the design just by the yarn and how it comes off the spool, and then I added the fuzzy stuff.
Mm-hmm. How do you decide the color combination in a piece like this? Is it just sort of, those are some favorite colors and they work?
Yes, and weavers, we just collect and collect and collect. So when I go in my studio, I will see something and then I'll find something else to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I love to do. I love to create texture, and I love to combine colors.
So I also notice you have also incorporated little hidden treasures, right?
Yes, yeah. They are.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't even see that one.
This my father brought back from the war. And I did this shortly after he died. So I said, that's got to have my dad's coin in it.
What is it about weaving, Susan, that just speaks to you,
okay.
Because every artist seems to have that sort of real strong commitment.
When I was 25, I went into a gallery, and this woman was weaving on a small loom, and I thought, oh, I really want to know how to do that. And at 45, my husband bought me my huge loom, which sat in our library for another 20 years until I retired. So I decided the first thing I was going to do when I retired was to learn how to weave. And I was going to go away, to find a place that would teach me. I've landed on the site for the Thousand Islands Art Center, and they were offering a beginning weaving course. So I went and took it, and my mentor, Sonia Wall, said that they have a Wednesday Weavers group of ladies, and if any of us wanted to join, we could. So I've been going ever since. So from 2010, I started. And it's just, my work life was working with addiction and working in forensic mental health. I needed a gentler world. So this did it. You know, this was absolutely what I needed. And it's just been an amazing experience. The people that are attracted to weaving are amazing. And there's always something to learn.
A new exhibit of work by Waddington fiber artist Susan Riley is on display this month at the Lake St. Lawrence Gallery, right on Main Street in Waddington. And you'll find images of her work, some images of her work, on our website this morning at ncpr.org.
That is it for the show for the day. Morning Edition continues in just a minute. Then don't forget, it's Super Tuesday when 16 states make clear their choice for presidential nominee. We've got special coverage tonight at 8. I'm Monica Sandreski.
I'm Todd Moe. Thanks for listening. Be well.